Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
Let's talk, Bone, about, and I'd love each fan base to kind of chime in with their answer to this question, too. You guys are kind of experts, right, on your own personal team. So of the five teams in the Carolinas, I'd love to hear from all the fan bases that are covered. But we'll start, Bone, with the first one playing today. We'll start with Carolina. What do you think the ceiling and the floor is for them in the NCAA tournament?
The ceiling, of course, is the national championship.
I thought you were going to say the roof. I thought that was where you're going.
No, I've moved past that whole thing. The ceiling is the national championship, and you know they could end up the favorite along the way, Meg. If UConn gets knocked out of that top of the bracket, and certainly if Arizona, their path, Mac, is very clear. I don't think they're going to be really, honestly, pushed that hard until Arizona. And if Arizona gets knocked out of that thing, I don't really see much resistance besides Arizona for a Final Four run for the Heels. I don't have them winning the national title because I have UConn on that side of the Final Four. But if UConn gets knocked out of this thing, Mac, and it opens up on that side, and Arizona gets knocked out, that could be a pretty, I'm not going to say an easy walk to the national championship game, but there's not a ton of resistance I see in Carolina's path. UConn is, but if they're out of there,
yeah,
UConn, who's going to stop them?
UConn's the problem in my bracket.
Yeah.
I'm a Tar Heel homer, but I got to that matchup.
Yes.
And I remember the previous matchup earlier this year, and I think UConn's gotten better, quite honestly, than they were earlier in the year. That's I can't get past that matchup. Even Tar Heel homer, Matt.
I can't either, but if something breaks down there, you know, and they got taken out somehow, then
so you would say champion. I would say, yeah, if they don't have to play UConn, I would say championship's the floor. And maybe I'm selling them. It's the ceiling. Maybe I'm selling them short. But I just, that's the one matchup that scares me. The rest of them, I think the Heels can roll their sleeves up and get after it against everybody else. Now, what is the floor, though, Bone? I guess you don't think the floor is very low, you know, based on what you just said.
I don't see too many scenarios, Mac, unless, you know, something they have some way off game. And when you've got the veterans like Davis and Baycott in these early games, RJ Davis, I don't think, Mac, is going to allow them to fall to Mississippi State, to fall in the Sweet 16. The earliest I could see them going out would be to Arizona. I don't see second round or Sweet 16 them getting knocked out of this.
I tend to agree with you.
I don't think
Davis, like, Flounder doesn't want to hear this. He doesn't want to touch the money.
I don't think Davis and Baycott are going to allow them to get upset before the Elite Eight.
I don't think, and I've been saying this all week, I don't really think their half of their region is really that tough at all for a one seed.
I don't either.
I could rue the moment I said this, right? Tar Heel fans right now are shaking in their boots because I'm making this declaration, right? It's one thing if you do it, but oh, Mr. Curse Man's doing it. But I think Alabama's, I believe, lost 4-6 or 5-7. They don't play a lick of defense. Mississippi State and Michigan State, I feel, are grinded out type teams. And I don't think they're going to grind it out better than Carolina. I think they could push Carolina for a while, 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're St. Mary's a grinded out team. I don't think they're going to grind it out better. This Tar Heel team, I said this weeks ago, toughness and defense travel. They could have crappy shooting nights, but toughness and defense for the Tar Heels, I expect to be there every game. Now, if it's not, we get a different story, but I expect it to be there every game. So I almost feel like the floor is Arizona. I don't know if that sounds crazy.
I would worry, Mac, if they had A&M as their SEC team, as the 8-9,
yeah.
Only because look how A&M plays. It's those guards. It's downhill. It's driving. Think about some matchups this year, whether it be Syracuse or Georgia Tech. They've had some games where the team just drives and drives and drives and drives, and they can't stop it. That's A&M's game. I don't think their 8-9 matchup is going to be a problem for them based off who they got.
What about
A&M would be one where I'm like, okay, I could see maybe them getting really pushed far, but not this matchup.
What about South Carolina? They are the second team up from the Carolinas to play today. And tell us, if you're a Heels fan and you think we are off base, let us know. 704-570-9610. I feel like we're giving you some love there, except in the UConn comparison. Yeah. I don't know if that's agitating fans. What about South Carolina? What's the ceiling and the floor for the Gamecocks?
I would say, well, obviously the floor would be losing to Oregon in the first game, which is a concern. The second round to me would be the ceiling because the potential 3-6 matchup with Creighton. I don't love that. I love Creighton in this tournament. But, Mac, even if South Carolina wins a game in this tournament and got beat by Creighton, that would put them at 27-8 for the season. A second round tournament appearance for a team that was picked last in the SEC. So, yes, I want them to go as far as they can. I do root for them, believe it or not. Yeah, oh, you know what? No, I root for them too. I want them to go as far as possible. But even if they got knocked out, that's still a hell of a year by Lamont Paris. So I'm not saying it's house money, but they've already gone so far above expectations.
What Bone just said is a common statement on this show from one of the two hosts. Yeah, I root for them too. Yeah, they're also my team as well.
Although that's I got to tell you, is that a fan law violation for Boney? Because South Carolina ended Zion's team, right?
No.
Bone's a walking fan law violation.
Michigan State.
Are you still trying to get this man in fan law court?
Let's go back in history. First of all, Zion lost to Michigan State in 2019.
Well, there's been so many failures
two
along
years,
the way.
Yeah. You know failures back there. 2017. 2017.
Awful personal.
2017 was the year, and I wasn't even a South Carolina fan yet. Then I came later on down the line.
Bone's fandom is complicated, man. Let's accept it for what it is.
Wasn't about my fandom, fella.
I tend to agree with you. I have Creighton going very far in this tournament. They're experienced. They're top 25 offense and defense, which I think is a key. I think balance is a key for tournament championships and long runs in the tournament. And they've got guys inside and out on Creighton. Even if South Carolina wins, I'd have a hard time believing they're going to beat Creighton. So I feel like that's their ceiling, is winning one game. And I have picked Oregon to win this matchup. We'll see what happens. I don't like the way they have offensive lulls. I don't like the way they finish the season either, South Carolina.
Yeah.
I don't think they're playing their best ball. But that doesn't take away, Gamecock fans, I'm not trying to be a hater, doesn't take away from what Lamont Paris did. And by the way, Flown, on the opening day of March Madness, Bone is wearing a South Carolina Gamecocks hat today.
Ooh,
about
that, yeah.
All right?
Yep.
All right, let's go to...
Because the family split. My family split this week. Duke's playing tomorrow.
Let's go to NC State.
Sorry to call me out. Mac is wearing seven hats today.
Was Bone a Gamecock fan last basketball season? I missed that memo. Women's, I think he was. All right.
Why did this become about my fans? Why is this about my fandom?
Let's refocus, Bone. Refocus.
Ask. Kiss it.
Here it is. NC State's ceiling and floor is what, Bone?
Well, the floor would be losing to Texas Tech because that's where I have them going today. I'm losing this game.
Yeah, there's no yeah.
I mean, ceiling would be
Sweet 16.
I think it's the same as South Carolina's, and I'm basing that off matchups. If they win today, most likely they're playing Kentucky in the second round, and I would have Kentucky winning that one. So much like South Carolina, the fact that they ended up having this season, that they are where they are, that's an unbelievable effort by Kevin Keats. But I do not see them getting the Sweet 16. I think second round.
So, Flown, this is interesting because you can't stand NC State. You and Roy are on the same level of NC State hatred. You think they can beat Kentucky?
I think Kentucky's the most fraudulent team maybe in this entire field. Like, the people that are kissing that team's ass, like, what have you seen lately that makes you think that they're a great basketball team? Like, I know they can score
they beat Carolina this year.
But, yeah.
He did say lately, though.
Yeah, I mean, the second half of the season, I mean, they've gotten worse defensively as the year's gone along.
Their defense,
that's the problem.
Their defense is terrible. I know a lot of State fans, and we'll talk about this later, a lot of State fans, I think they could pull it off. You know, the last time they were in Pittsburgh in the NCAA tournament, they went to the Sweet 16. Knocked off number one seed Nova and then knocked off LSU in the second round. So I think some State fans are thinking, can we pull that magic again? Just like we had the D.C. magic going last week. I don't know if State could score with Kentucky. That's the thing about Kentucky. Their defense is terrible. I don't think they're a Final Four team, but holy crap, there's a lot of offensive talent on that team.
I mean, they bring Dillingham and Shepherd off the bench.
I mean, they're
by design, but that's
loaded
crazy.
Up. But I don't know, man. I would love to see it. God, I would love to see NC State beat Calipari. All right, real quick here, Bone Man. Who else is playing? Clemson. What is the ceiling and the floor? I have the ceiling and the floor as tomorrow for Clemson.
Well, they could.
I'm sorry, Tiger fans. Y'all, that team frustrates me, man.
They could Mac win their first game, or they could go win the national championship. We have no idea where it's going. I think that I have them getting knocked out today. But
tomorrow, you mean?
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Tomorrow, yeah, I'm getting knocked out. First game. A lot of people love New Mexico, right? I've seen that as a very trendy.
Dude, they are trendy, talented.
Trendy pick, like, not just for today, but one of those double digits. I have Drake making a run to the Elite Eight. I've seen some people with New Mexico in the final. Dan Orlovsky, man. Noted basketball expert Dan Orlovsky has the Lobos in the Final Four. I just saw that right now.
Oh, God. That's right up there with his food takes. I got New Mexico in the Sweet 16, though.
Elite Eight.
That's a talented team, man, that kind of hit a bump in the middle of the season and seems to have picked up where they were
so
early
many dudes
in the
that
season.
Can score the ball. Like, how is Clemson going to contain each and every? I mean, they got four guys that average almost 13 a game.
Last one, like, Boney. Yep. Last. So I'm very skeptical of Clemson. If they prove me wrong, I'd be elated. I want the Clemson Tigers to advance. I'm just very skeptical. They've been a very frustrating team for me personally. Boney, the Duke Blue Devils. What do you think? And we'll talk a ton about Duke tomorrow. They start tomorrow, so we're going to kind of have the big Duke conversation tomorrow. What do you think their ceiling and floor is, Bone Man?
The floor would be, I worry about James Madison in round two. I worry more about James Madison than I do Wisconsin, to be honest with you, Mac. But I think that their ceiling is Final Four. That's my ceiling for Duke. I'm not saying national title, but I think the ceiling is the Final Four. I'd have to see more to say they could go and win a Final Four game with this group, but I think that the ceiling's the Final Four. I'm just worried about James Madison. I actually think, Mac, if they get by this weekend, I think they're going to the Final Four. I think if they get to the second weekend, they'll advance past that. And we'll do Final Four picks later,
yeah.
But I think the Final Four is the ceiling right now.
Wow, Bone Man, you ain't worried about Kelvin Sampson's crew?
We'll talk about it when we do Final Four picks,
oh,
right?
Oh, man. Anyway, I would say yes. It doesn't seem like this is a vintage Vermont, Tom Brennan, Coppenrath, Sorrentine combination.
Sorrentine!
So I don't think Duke can lose tomorrow, despite what Tar Heel fans are probably typing right now on their phones to us.
Oh, zero chance they lose.
JMU, I do think that's a live one, and I do think JMU can and will beat Wisconsin. Experienced, great three-point defense. That worries me from a Duke perspective. JMU's number two three-point defense in the country, and they put up 84 points. They have an offense, too.
Don Shire better be calling Dustin Kearns.
The ceiling?
I know Dustin Kearns is mad at the referees right now for the App loss last night, but two of the three losses for JMU were to App State.
That's true.
What did they
That's
do
true.
In those games?
That's true. Ceiling? I have a hard time. You know I have a hard time with the UConn matchup for Carolina? I have a hard time with the Houston matchup for Duke, although we don't know how you know, hurt Roberts is.
Yes.
Who is their heart and soul under the glass. But if toughness is a problem, I've said this all week, if toughness is a problem, you don't want to see Houston.
Sure.
And toughness has appeared to be a problem here the last couple games for Duke. So I have a hard time with that matchup. That's what's killing me. If Houston gets knocked out by like A&M, which I shouldn't say a lot of people think, but there are experts that do think that has a strong chance of happening, then it could open up for Duke then.
Good.
You know? So anyway, man, I would love it. I would love it if Carolina and Duke could both get that damn Final Four.
Hey, 13-year-old Hayden, go to school, man. We don't need your picks right now, right?
Why? Is he all over the heels and he's making you mad?
He's spelling Duke wrong. He's doing it. Just stop it right now. How about you go to school? You learn how to spell Duke better. It's not two O's, all right? It's D-U-K-E.
His teacher might have taught him that way. No, you get a Tar Heel teacher.
This 13-year-old Hayden's up in my kitchen again today.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wesson Walker Show.
We got some questions coming in on the text line. You can feel free to ask your March Madness question to Nada Edwards in the Planet Kia Studios with us. Stanford P, simply ask, what's your best upset bet?
Best upset bet is actually going on right now. Duquesne, BYU.
I like it.
I had Duquesne going at least one. The other one. Samford over Kansas. Because Samford...
McCullough being out.
Kansas is... This is the shallowest Kansas team I can think of in maybe 15 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe Bill Self's entire tenure. Like, this is not a good Kansas team. So, Samford going ahead is probably my best bet.
Yeah, I agree with that. I did not pick them to lose, but I did say, though, that this Kansas team is lackluster this year, man. Well, they were supposed to be so great when the season started.
People are worried about how Samford plays. If the tournament is a tournament of styles, and then you have Kansas, who loses a guy that scores 18 points per game, monster loss already, right? And then you have a team that puts so much pressure on you constantly, mm-hmm. and then they throw waves at you. That's going to be really tough to deal with. Plus, we know while Kansas has a couple of championships to stave away some of the bad reputation that other coaches have earned by not getting to the Final Four, we know the Jayhawks will get bounced early. We've seen it with Bill Self quite a few times. And so maybe that shows its head once again.
Yeah, here in this capping. Game. I did pick Samford because Samford beat. And I feel like the Kansas is really beat up. So that's why I went with
it. It's a four-player team.
Yeah.
It's quite literally a four-player team that I wouldn't trust to go further than the first weekend anyway.
Nick from Belmont writes in, how far can the Longhorns get in the tournament this year? Got them losing in the Sweet 16. Is it logical for them this season or a pipe dream to get to the Sweet 16?
Mm. Rodney Terry already went to an Elite Eight in his first year.
Yeah.
I think they end up beating Tennessee because as much as I like Dalton Connect and would love to see him in a Hornets uniform, it's Rick Barnes. I don't trust Rick Barnes.
So this is what I want to transition to anyway. I'm glad you brought that game up because Tennessee, Rick Barnes really even specifically, he needs a deep run to shake that reputation we were just talking about.
Yes, he does.
So does Matt Painter with Purdue.
Yes.
Tony Bennett did. They were never going to make a deep run as their team was constructed. But Tennessee, they should. You are expected to, just within a vacuum when we start to look at this, they're a good team. Tennessee should make that type of run. And same thing with Purdue. Are those the two teams that you think need the deepest run the most? And if so, who wins out in that category?
I would throw John Shire and Duke in there.
Okay.
You got all those five stars. At some point, you need to start. There needs to be proof of concept. There is no proof of concept with what Duke's doing right now, even though I believe in what they're doing going forward. But Matt Painter needs it, too. Matt Painter really, really needs it. Because if they go out in the first weekend, I kind of got him going out in the first weekend to Utah State because I believe in the Mountain West and what the Mountain West has done. I hope they win. I hope Purdue wins, and I hope they go deep because if not – they're never going to hear the end of it. And you've basically wasted the last back-to-back Naismith Player of the Year award winner in Zach Edey two straight years. And after that, like, what do you do?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think, though, I'm feeling Purdue being on that Virginia type of time. They got embarrassed last year with what happened to them losing to a 16 seed. And so I think that they're going to come out and just be seeing red the whole tournament and just really just try to go out there and get the job done. I'd second it with you on Duke as well. I think Duke, this freshman class, let's just be frank here, man, it's been a bust. There haven't been the only guy that's really showed and proved out of this group McCain. Is Jared McCain. That's it. Everybody else is coming there, and a lot of these guys were top 25, top 30, so they were high-rated five-star caliber guys. And like I said, with this historic class, the 55th historic class that they've had coming in there, I can't wait to see what's going to happen with some of these freshmen because a lot of them are going to hit the portal, and they're no longer Louis Luggage, like Deion said. But the last one that I would say is that I would go with Kentucky as another team that needs to make a deep run because this is another
Ooh, boy,
guy.
Yeah.
I love Calipari. He gets the top recruits every single year. This was supposed to be another one of those classes. You talk about Dillingham, DJ Wagner, who I was super high on to start the season. They're another one that people just are really doubting him right now, and I think they need to make a run.
I think they, if I were to construct a category of the biggest frauds, Kentucky might be in there.
Mm.
It's too Here's why. They are not only not good at defense, they're pretty terrible at it. If you look at their adjusted defensive metrics, they're terrible.
Can I stop you right here? Did you believe in Alabama? Do you have them winning the game?
No. They are in that category.
Because Alabama is the worst defensive team I've seen in 2 years.
Well, and it's such a stark difference from what they were last year. Well, and even a couple of years, they were much better defensively last year than they are this year.
Yeah, Brandon Miller had a lot to do with that. And you know, Clowney.
Yeah, well, Clowney's a big deal. But that's my point. The SEC, I was starting to look at some of the stats that they've accumulated. It feels a little Big 12 football-y. Like the SEC wants to claim a great defensive unit with a whole bunch of schools in football, but off in college basketball, they're a little Big 12-y. Now, Auburn breaks that notion a little bit, and so it's not quite
that
example.
Which is why they won the tournament.
Right. But Alabama, terrible at defense this year. Kentucky, terrible at defense this year. Defense, man, you start to look at what holds up more often than not when you get to March. That defense stuff, the whole cliche about it traveling, maybe use it for football, maybe use it for basketball. It works.
It works in college basketball because you don't have as many shot makers like you do in the NBA.
Well, and it gives you a fail safe if you can't hit shots, which Kentucky, that's the thing that can break the mold because their 3-point shooting is absolutely all sorts of bananas. Like the fact that they have three guys that shoot over 44%, it's mind-boggling. Two of them coming off of the bench. I'll fail if those guys just go crazy nuclear because that's totally a possibility. But if they don't, that's how they get beat. And you got some. Look at that part of the bracket.
I will give you that. But the thing is, we're talking about the best 3-point shooting team in the country, Wes Walker. That's the thing. It's like you have the best. We haven't even gotten into Reed Sheppard, who's somehow been talked about as a top five lottery pick, which I'm not sure I agree with. But at the same point, they got guys that I think they're going to be fine. You're calling them frauds. I can't call them frauds just yet.
It might be a little too strong, but
yes.
I'm fading Kentucky before we get to the final. They're not going to be a Final Four pick.
Ebenezer
I just can't
Scrooge.
Believe them.
Strikes again.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky part with them because it's like you have the built-in caveat that, oh, they're freshmen and they don't have time enough to be able to build the chemistry to make runs. But we have seen him make Elite Eight runs and things like that with these groups that we didn't necessarily see it coming with. But I think, you know, over the last couple of seasons, people have really started to cast doubt on him. And you hear it every year with Calipari. But the thing is, he's been trying to do it with freshmen for the longest. And I think we see a lot of these big programs, you know, they're going through the same things, having to play with a bunch of transfers that's pretty much the same as one and dones, or you got a bunch of one and done guys and you're trying to make it work. And in these tournaments with these teams that have been playing together 3-4 years, it's going to always come up and catch you slipping at some point.
So with the reputation that some of these coaches have, like just starting to think about this impromptu, man, I didn't realize how many coaches actually have a very tricky past with March. Because Calipari is that guy.
Yeah.
But really, really what happens is if we start to evaluate what these coaches have done in their tenure, if you got a chip, we'll excuse a lot of what's happened.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You better have done it within the last 5 years or so, or we're not going to forget all of those early round exits. Matt Painter doesn't have that. Doesn't have a Final Four bid.
No, he doesn't.
So we're going to hold it against you. Rick Barnes doesn't have that, despite having great talent at Texas, great talent at Tennessee the last few years. He doesn't have that Final Four run either.
I mean, we held it against Dean for years.
So I guess, are we being too hard on those guys? Because Bill Self has them too, but he's got two titles. It feels like it happens a little too much with those other guys that we discuss. But man, it is really hard. It gives you more of an appreciation for Roy Williams, to be honest with you.
It should. What Roy did in the era of keeping everything together and winning despite all that, like, it makes you appreciate the guys like Roy Williams. It makes you appreciate a guy like Jay Wright.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Well, how much, though, are we going to adjust that now for the times? Like I said,
because no, we're not
only you, I mean, you have the teams at the top of college basketball. churning and having that turnover on their roster every single year now. It's no longer just, oh, well, you got some guys that want to do the one and done route and some guys that want to do guys that are going to be there 3 or 4 years. Now it's pretty much you bring in a kid. If he doesn't like how much he's playing, he's going to leave. You're going to have to find a transfer to be able to fill his shoes or go try to find a 4 or 5 star. And so I think that has to be played into it, too, is just how hard of a job these coaches have now to be able to get to a championship round with teams that just came together, what, 4, 5, 6 months prior.
But Wes, that's why I love what Duke did. Duke went and got probably one of the most influential people in the sneaker circuit in Rachel Baker and made her de facto general manager. She handles all the NIL. She handles all the acquisitions and talks with John Shire about that. That's why I hope this works, because that method is the only way. It keeps the coaches from being burnt out. It keeps them from basically the coach's coach. She handles everything else. They work in concert and with the assistant coaches. It should work like that. That's the way this is heading, no matter, like, anyone that wants to be like, I like my college basketball the old way. The old way is not coming back.
Yeah. Well, so, it's what makes that interesting, because maybe that's not, it's never going to be as common knowledge what you're discussing, even though it's a huge part as to why Duke can be so successful recruiting. But think about how much pressure that puts on John Shire, because Duke has everything else figured out. And I'm not even saying they don't have the head coach figured out. I'm not here to tell you John Shire should be fired. We're talking about one tournament run where you got bounced by a good enough Tennessee team because of the physicality last year in the round of 32. There is an achievement. There's a tournament win with the ACC conference tourney that you won last year. That's something, right? Especially there in your first year. But when you have everything set up with guys that are coming back, with the freshman recruiting class, with everything set up in the NIL biz, what's the excuse?
Well, but I was going to say, to your physicality point quickly, and then Nadia, you could go, is there something to be said for that there? Because that Tennessee team that they got beat by last year, I mean, they were grizzled veterans. And so it's like when you're bringing in all these top-notch freshmen, them boys ain't ready for that. They coming in there, they're not used to being. They used to being the most dominant, the most physical, the illest player on the court at their high school. They're not used to a dude that's been in there 3-4 years on that training program, hitting them with those elbows and throwing themselves into them to box out, man. That's a new experience for those boys.
Yeah, Wes is absolutely right, because there's a difference between high school weight training programs and college weight training programs.
I've been there 3-4 years.
You've been there working on that.
And lifting.
Yeah. Here's my question. Ain't no other way you can recruit, though.
Right.
What are you going to do? Say no to these guys?
You got
to
hope for the best, or either hope you find a transformational guy like when they had Anthony Davis and they won a title with AD.
Well, but yeah, and I guess when we're talking about the high schoolers making that transition, you're right. You do have the grown men, and this is when we talk about the North Carolina style of building a team with those guys being there. Maybe that starts to transition a little bit more as the portal era becomes more and more prevalent. But this has always been the problem. You can't say no to the talent that is ready to come to Durham. Like, if they're not ready physically, then you can't say no to them. But you just have to adjust everywhere else, and that's where John Shire comes in, because he is going to be the scapegoat, and this is just like the quarterback, right? You're going to get a lot of the credit. You're also going to get all of the criticism. And so if he can't figure this thing out, and if they have an early bounce again, people are going to be talking a lot about maybe we look at somebody else within the family or in the brotherhood to take John Shire's spot.
So I have something on that. We might overemphasize the transfer portal, because if we start looking at the guys that work, your Harrison Ingrams, a whole bunch of those, like the exception rather than the rule. A lot of these 5 stars are a little bit more reliable when we start thinking about that. Look at Kansas and Nick Timberlake. They gave him what, almost $400,000, and he's done nothing for them. He's not one of the 4 guys that they rely on. He's not that good. Look at Cormac Ryan. Like, if we want to take a look at this locally, he's been hot and he's been cold. Now, granted, the high highs have been more than worth it for what they did, but at the same point, he's been just as unreliable as anything else. So maybe, just maybe, we might overemphasize the transfer portal, because granted, they work, it works, but it necessarily isn't the cure-all that everyone thinks.
Do you think that maybe Shia may look at it and say, all right, maybe we dial back and maybe take, in a class where we might take 5 or 6 guys, take 3 to 4 high school guys, and then go find us 2 interior players out of the portal that's going to give us that physicality that we need to be able to compete.
And I'm glad you mentioned interior, because that's where I think you win with college basketball. It's why I think UConn is the best.
We got Mike Woodson in the Planet Kia Studios today.
Because I like what Duke is bringing in next year. Cooper Flagg is going to be awesome.
I can't
Isaiah Evans is dope. They just won the state title. They're going to be good. As long as they get a center, and I believe Cliff Omriuri is from Rutgers, is available in the portal. Let's say Duke brings him in. They're my title favorites next
year. Well, that big man, too. I don't want to butcher his name again, but the African kid that they got, that's the number three player in the class, too. He's really good,
too. But we just talked about it.
He's a young boy, but he's big young. Now. He got that size. But, I'm with you, man. I think they need to go find two dogs out of the portal that's going to give them that interior grit that they're lacking.
It's why it feels people make the joke, or maybe not even so much the joke, but the statement about how collegiate athletics is now professional. Where the similarity here, though, is now that it's so out in the open, the team building resembles that a little bit, where your stars might be your drafted players, unless you're a big market. So the guys that are your stars with North Carolina, it's RJ Davis, it's Armando Bacot. They've been here. They were recruited. They were developed. And they're the top two players on the squad. And then you fill in the pieces in the transfer portal, quote unquote, free agency. Where Ingram, a perfect puzzle piece there. Just fits in like a glove. Mm-hmm. Cormac Ryan, in theory, is supposed to fit very well. But the three-point shot, by the way, probably should have seen that coming. He's never been an amazing three-point shooter. But, Cormac Ryan.
Neither was Brady Manick. And then Brady Manick became Brady Manick. Mm.
Jalen Withers is exactly what they need off of the bench. And so you go and then you hit free agency. And then you put these guys in the right spot. But the stars, those are the guys that you recruited.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that know the system.
Yeah, and in a way, it becomes the technical perfect way to build a team, because what you want ideally is for some solid players to stay in your program 2 to 3 years and become vets, and then you mix in the superstar young guys to come in and be the showstoppers for you. So now you got to kind of use the portal and recruiting to build those type of teams that you would have had 5-10 years ago.
Last thing, it's so weird, man, threading the needle in recruiting.
Yes.
Like, you have to recruit the guy that isn't going to leave and be a top 20 selection. If he's going to be a top 30, you can't recruit the guy that is willing to go as a top 30 first round pick. And you have to make sure they're not good enough to leave in the first couple years, but you have to make sure they're good enough to develop into somebody that might be interesting to an NBA team and really college good, but not necessarily NBA good. It's hard. It's hard out here for these coaches.
Don't play good, but don't play too good.
Well, that's the thing. You got to do both. You got to be in for the Cooper Flags as well as you got to be in for the Noah Clowneys and all that. Mm-hmm. At some point, you just have to put it together. And this is what you're supposed to hire and delegate for. And this is why the coach can be the front facing job, but at the same time, he can't be the one buying the groceries as well as anymore. It's not possible for this kind of gig. It's why, again, Rachel Baker works for Duke right now, and that why she's going to really earn her money when they hit the portal this year and grab a big man that's going to, grab a big man that's better than Ryan Young, who I like, but he came from Northwestern. So all right. Enough said.
Ryan Young shade to end this segment. Good team building combo with Nada in the studio.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken, so maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken, they're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
Smoke, why are you laughing at me right now?
You probably thought Lil Durk was Dirk Nowitzki's son.
Well, you know, you might not be wrong about that. you might not be wrong about that. I'm just saying. 704-570-9610. Let's head out to the Body Works Plus guest hotline and check in with Luke DeCock, Raleigh News and Observer, longtime sports columnist. He's with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline ahead of tonight's bout between NC State, the 11 seed, and the 6 seed Texas Tech Red Raiders. What's going on, Luke DeCock? How are you, buddy?
I'm old enough. But first of all, not only have I heard, I mean, I've vaguely heard of Lil Durk, but I'm old enough to remember when people chose names that were big, like Big Papa or Heavy D, and now it's Lil Durk or DaBaby. It's like everything goes in circles, like, you know, bell bottoms and flare jeans and all that kind of stuff. It all comes back.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I can't claim to know him, but I like what I heard. Somebody just said this slaps. I concur to whoever that texter is. So.
Dude, I'm all too old for this.
Yeah, we both are, man. We got Luke DeCock with us, Raleigh News and Observer, ahead of tonight's bout between NC State and Texas Tech. As most folks probably recall, Texas Tech was not that far away from winning a national championship 5 years ago against UVA. What does this iteration of Texas Tech present to NC State tonight?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing in common with 2019. New coach, new players.
Yep.
They're going to be down their best forward. Their second best forward is injured, is maybe going to play. I think this actually is a matchup that plays in NC State's favor. The way DJ Burns is playing right now, Texas Tech can't really defend him. They just can't. They're going to have to double. They're going to have to double immediately. So if DJ Burns plays with some composure, makes smart decisions, the Wolfpack should have a lot of open shots on the perimeter. Now, whether they can make them or not is the eternal question. And Texas Tech is scrappy, and they can shoot it, and they can run, and they have a really good backcourt. They're going to put some pressure on that. But NC State, you know, the chess game in this one is not complicated. It is feed DJ Burns, make them double, and then hit shots. I said this with our friends Joe Ovius and Joe Giglio earlier today, and they looked at me like I had three heads. I have a feeling this could be a Ben Middlebrooks game because the Clemson transfer is going to be on the court a lot with nobody guarding him. And so if DJ Burns can get him the ball in positions where Ben Middlebrooks just has to throw it up into the basket or, you know, slam it off the glass in the square and it goes in, you know, Ben Middlebrooks could have a big game tonight. I think that, you know, in our new gambling era, that would be at pretty long odds. But I just got that sense that maybe we could be headed that way. If NC State wins, that is certainly a likely scenario. The other one is NC State hits a bunch of open shots and wins easily. But Texas Tech is coming out of a good conference, has played well, has depth in the backcourt. They can do things that will make things hard on NC State. But I think NC State has a schematic advantage just based on Texas Tech's situation.
We talked about that phenomenal run all week long, and I haven't gotten a chance to talk to you about it. Just if you could, just put in your words what they did last week, and how was the conversation out there, you know, really evolved this week about Kevin Keats? I know it's been excitement about the tournament, but a lot's changed in the span of a week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the conversation has evolved around Kevin Keats to the point that there isn't really one anymore. You know, you've kind of taken whatever uncertainty there was. And look, I think we've talked about this. My position all along was that the administration did not want to make a move. We got a chancellor with one foot out the door. We've got an AD who likes the status quo. We got Kevin Keats had the support of some of the state's biggest boosters still. There was not an appetite to make a change. But you lose to Louisville, you lose to Syracuse. You know, that may have forced some people's hands, and certainly the word on the street in Washington was that State was ready to make that move if NC State bowed out early. Obviously, that's off the table now. This gives, and we've talked about this before, Keats has never been able to get any momentum at NC State. There's never been that continued sort of push of success. And we talk about it, if they'd made the tournament in 19, which they should have, and there had been a tournament in 20, which they would have made, then it's a different story. But those things didn't happen. So the narrative isn't that. The narrative is they can't get over the hump. They bottomed out 2 years ago. So there's a sense now that by doing something that hasn't been done in more than a generation, now there's some momentum around the program. They need a good NCAA tournament run here. I mean, if they can beat Texas Tech and play a good game against Kentucky, then you've sort of, becomes a force multiplier for everything that happened in the ACC tournament. But to see grown men crying in the stands, this as I wrote, like, this is a school that's been living in the past for a long time, and now there's actually a present, and that's a huge change for NC State. Where the joke going around even before the end of the ceremony was that we were less than a year away from the celebration of the one-year anniversary of the 2024 ACC champion.
Luke DeCock, Raleigh News and Observer. He's with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. What are your thoughts on Virginia's loss the other night and the sudden dialogue around Tony Bennett's program and whether or not they need big changes?
You know, I don't think Virginia needs big changes. He's proven that the system can work and what he does can work with the right players. They just don't have enough talent. They have one good shooter in Isaac McNeely. He's very streaky. You've got a good, versatile player in Reese Beekman. You've got Ryan Dunn, who's an athletic guy, but not an offensive player, is not going to score. And then you've got a bunch of dead weight. When you go back and look at that 2019 team, Ty Jerome was a dog. Kyle Guy was a dog. Mamadou Diakite, I had 5 years to get that right, wasn't going to score a ton, but he was would go after everything, rebounding. He was a great athlete. Kehi Clark, not a big scorer, but obviously a guy who could bring all those parts together as a point guard. They don't have any of that talent. There's not a Ty Jerome on this team. There's not a Kyle Guy on this team. The question isn't whether Tony Bennett's system can work. It's whether he can get good enough players to do it. And right now he doesn't. He does not have the Jimmys and Joes right now. I don't think there's any problem with his X's and O's. But you got to have talent. And Virginia's just not a talented team. They played the third easiest ACC schedule. They beat up on a lot of bad teams. They deserve to be in the NCAA tournament based on the selection criteria, but they just weren't good enough to beat, you know, a comparable team on a neutral court because they didn't have the talent and they don't have a plan B, right? They're not going to press you. They're not going to push the pace. If Virginia falls behind by double digits, they're done. And that's a problem in today's world of college basketball. I think those are the adaptations Tony Bennett needs to look at.
All right, Duke, Vermont tomorrow night. I just checked that line opened up at, I believe, a dozen. I've seen it at 13 in some places as well. I'm sure this is going to come off like a covert gambling question, like I'm asking you for tips. But, I mean, do you expect a closer game than that?
I think normally when you look at Duke against a team like Vermont, you expect the line to be wider than that. You know, you look at most of these first-round lines with 3 and 4 seeds, they're 14, 15, 18 points. I think that reflects some uncertainty among the public over Duke's reliability, especially after seeing them against NC State. But I really think when you look back at Duke's last two losses against the Wolfpack, against Carolina in Durham, Duke did not play badly. Duke got beat. Duke got beat by two better teams. I don't think Vermont is a better team. And so I think Duke is actually probably being a little bit underestimated here because of the way their season, their regular season and ACC tournament ended. I'm more curious to see what happens when Duke plays Wisconsin or James Madison in the next round if the Blue Devils advance. I think that becomes a much bigger challenge for a Duke team that struggled to handle adversity this year.
Luke DeCock, Raleigh News and Observer. He's with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. I saved the best for last, if you will. More lawsuits this week, Luke. Clemson filed one. ACC said, we're going to sue you back. Florida State's is already active. The running joke here today is that there are many lawsuits as bids for the ACC, but it's getting contentious here. And Josh Pate, I'll throw this in. Josh Pate is claiming that ESPN in the next several months can pull the lever to blow up the deal unilaterally and that he expects them to do that. Now that we're, I guess, here, whatever here is, what are you making about the future of the ACC?
Yeah, I don't feel like we're here wherever here is going to be yet. I mean, I'm kind of like, wake me up, right? We're all yelling and people are filing lawsuits or running around and North Carolina's, you know, Barzini pulling the strings in the darkness. You know, by the end of this, Jim Phillips is going to wake up and say, you know, what I didn't realize until today is it was UNC all along. But let's get to the end of this, right? Whatever it's going to be, if it's going to be ESPN says, okay, we're okay with the 18 and then 17 and 16, 15, whatever, then fine, let's get there. If this is all just a ploy to blow up the league so the good schools in the league, and by that I mean from a television perspective, if Clemson and Florida State and UNC and Virginia and bring along Virginia Tech and NC State, they want to just blow it up and start over without Pitt and without Notre Dame and without Syracuse and without Boston College. Now, I think if I'm Clemson, what makes the most sense? Being in a league that has traditional rivalries and has powerhouse basketball and football programs. I mean, to me, that's the old ACC schools, minus maybe Wake Forest, plus Virginia Tech, and plus Miami. That's a much more marketable league because when they expanded, the whole point was to add, you know, sometimes weak schools to get their television market. Hey, man, it's 2024. Nobody cares about your television markets anymore. Nobody's worried about cable subscription. How many eyeballs do you bring? If the 8, 9, 10 programs in the ACC that bring the most eyeballs burned everything down and started over themselves, I'm not sure that's the worst thing in the world for them. That may be the Galaxy brand play.
Is Carolina, as has been reported, I should say, Carolina seems to be the apple of everybody's eye in potential expansion, in particular the Big Two, the SEC and the Big Ten. But I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago that NC State, or rather the state government, stepped in and said, no, we're in control of, you know, who goes where and this realignment stuff. I saw Brad Crawford this morning was reporting that, you know, he thinks NC State ends up in the Big 12. What's the truth here as far as the state politics go and who's directing what and what that means for Carolina and NC State in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, everybody's assumption when the Board of Governors decided they had to stick their nose into things was that they were trying to keep UNC and NC State together, which probably wasn't going to be the case given the fact that it was NC State's vote that flipped the expansion vote, which North Carolina was against. So that was, you know, but maybe it's not. Maybe this, the Board of Governors is doing this to make sure they aren't together, to make sure North Carolina is protected, because we all know in North Carolina, the Board of Governors looks out for UNC first and everyone else second. UNC Chapel Hill first and everyone else second. So I don't think anybody can really know. I will say this, though. If you look at the television situation across the country, television rights market, what happened to the Pac-12? They went to market. Nobody wanted them. I don't think ESPN or Fox in this current uncertainty over streaming, over eyeballs, over cord cutting, I don't think either of them wants to give the Big Ten or the SEC a bunch more money to add some of these ACC schools, because otherwise they would have already. And if you're Bob Iger and Jimmy Pitaro, it's not necessarily in your interest to get into another bidding war with Fox over Florida State and UNC and Miami and Clemson and whoever. So I don't get the sense from the other conferences, which means the other networks, or the ACC's network in the case of ESPN, that there's a tremendous appetite to carve up the ACC yet. Because when that appetite is there, it will happen before the Board of Governors has a chance to react. And that's the bad part for UNC. The Pac-12 fell apart overnight. UNC has put themselves in a position, thanks to the Board of Governors, where it can't react at that speed. And that could be a big problem going forward. That said, I don't think any of this is imminent. The rights money is not there. Unless the Galaxy brain play is to blow up the ACC and start over, which I do think makes a lot of sense and I've been talking about for 2 years, then I don't think there's any momentum from the SEC or the Big 12 to add schools right now. A year from now, that may be different. People may have a better sense of the rights market. But there just aren't the networks just aren't putting up that cash right now. We just haven't seen it. You see it with the NBA as well. It's all the same thing.
You tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.